All right, let's jack in, shall we? Get ready for our deep dive all about techno. I know you're pretty curious about this whole genre. You even sent over that Wikipedia article on it to get us started. Good choice. But hold on tight, because we're gonna uncover some sonic surprises. Think Detroit Cars, German reunification, even the little Doctor Who. You ready to see how it all connects?
I think it's going to be a fascinating journey.
Okay, so the Wikipedia article lays the groundwork, right? Techno, it's electronic dance music, usually clocking in between 120 and 150 beats per minute. That's the sweet spot for getting those feet moving. It's built around that steady, 44 beat, often instrumental, an emphasis on rhythm over melody. But here's where it gets interesting. The article mentions that techno, quote, sounds like technology, not technology that sounds like music. What do you think that means for someone who's, just stepping into the world of techno for the first time?
It's a great way to capture the essence of techno, I think. Think about it. Most music utilizes technology, but it's often hidden behind layers of production. Techno, on the other hand, it embraces the raw sound of technology. It's like those mechanical rhythms and synthesized textures are saying, "Hey, we're here. We're part of the music. We're not afraid to show it."
So it's not about hiding those electronic elements, it's about putting them front and center.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that rawness is part of what makes it so captivating, I think. It's a different kind of beauty, futuristic, almost industrial. Reflects the technological forces that are shaping our world.
Speaking of industrial, that brings us to our first stop on this journey, Detroit, the birthplace of techno. This is where those Detroit cars come in, right?
Absolutely. We can't talk about techno without mentioning the Belleville Three.
Yeah.
Juan Atkins, Derek May, and Kevin Saunderson. They're the pioneers who, emerged from the Detroit suburbs and really crafted this sound. But to understand their music, you have to understand Detroit in the 1980s.
Okay, paint a picture for me. Detroit, 1980s, decline of the auto industry, factory shutting down, a sense of like uncertainty hanging in the air. What was it about that environment that gave rise to techno?
Well, the Belleville Three, they weren't just making music, they were capturing the feeling of a city on the brink of change, the anxieties, the frustrations, but also the glimmers of hope as new technologies emerged. They were tapping into that raw energy, that feeling of a future being forged. In the midst of decay, they were heavily influenced by European electronic music like Kraftwerk, those robotic rhythms and icy melodies, and the synth pop sounds of Giorgio Moroder. But they also infused it with elements of African American music, like house and funk, creating this uniquely Detroit blend.
And the Wikipedia article even mentions Alvin Toffler's book, The Third Wave, which explores how technology was transforming society. It seems like they were trying to express those anxieties and those possibilities through their music, almost like a sonic prediction of the future.
Exactly. And one track that really stands out as a sonic landmark is No UFOs by Juan Atkins, released under his alias Model 500 in 1985. Some even call it the first techno production. And you can hear why. It's raw, stripped down, and totally hypnotic. Everything we now associate with that classic Detroit techno sound. Imagine hearing that for the first time back then. It must have sounded like a message from the future.
So that track was like a sonic blueprint for the genres.
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah.
It crystallized the essence of what techno would become. Futuristic, hypnotic, and deeply connected to those raw mechanical sounds of technology.
Now, the article also mentioned Chicago quite a bit, which makes sense, given the close relationship between techno and house music. Can you clarify that connection for us?
Yeah, it's important to make that distinction. Both genres emerged around the same time, both fueled by that spirit of innovation in electronic music. But house music, often born out of Chicago's vibrant club scene, tended to be more soulful, uplifting, and often featured vocals. Techno, while sharing those electronic roots, gravitated towards a darker, more industrial aesthetic, with a focus on those hypnotic rhythms and textures over melody. Imagine them as siblings, born from a similar musical family, but each developing their own distinct personalities.
Siblings from different mothers, maybe, but even though they had different vibes, there was definitely some, cross-pollination happening.
Absolutely. There's a great story about Frankie Knuckles, a legendary Chicago house DJ, buying a drum machine from Derek May, one of the Belleville Three. It illustrates the close personal connections and the shared passions that fueled both genres, in those early days. It wasn't about competition. It was about a community of innovators pushing the boundaries of electronic music together.
Okay, so we've got Detroit, we've got Chicago, two cities on the cutting edge of electronic music. But this story doesn't stop there, right? It sounds like techno was about to hop across the pond and take Europe by storm. The Wikipedia article even mentions the Second Summer of Love, which sounds way more chill than some of those hardcore techno parties I've heard about.
Definitely a different vibe. The Second Summer of Love was this incredible cultural phenomenon. Late 80s, particularly in the UK, house music and acid house were exploding, drawing people to those all-night warehouse parties and illegal raves. It was all about unity, euphoria, and escaping the mundane. And techno, with its hypnotic rhythms and futuristic sounds, fit right into that scene.
So it was like techno found its perfect dance partner in the UK rave scene. But what about Detroit? Did they feel a little left out as their music started taking off overseas?
There was definitely a sense of frustration. For some of those Detroit artists, they were seeing Europe embrace techno, providing venues and audiences that were eager for this new sound. Well, back home, they were struggling to find opportunities. It's almost as if Europe became the promised land for techno, a place where it can truly flourish.
But it wasn't just a one-way street, was it? It sounds like there was a real exchange of ideas happening between Detroit and Europe. The Wikipedia article mentions the compilation album Trezor II, Berlin and Detroit, a techno alliance.
You're right. It wasn't just about Detroit exporting its sound. It was a cultural conversation.
Mm-hmm.
A back and forth that shaped techno on both sides of the Atlantic. Yeah. And that brings us to a particularly fascinating chapter in techno's story.
Germany. And I bet this is where the story of German reunification comes into play.
You got it. The fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 was a seismic event. And techno emerged as this unexpected unifying force, especially for the younger generation. Imagine Berlin, a city divided for decades, suddenly reuniting, and this new sound pulsating with energy and a sense of limitless possibility becomes the soundtrack to that reunification. Clubs like Trezor, springing up in the former East Berlin, became magnets for DJs and techno enthusiasts from all over, creating the sense of community and shared experience that transcended political and cultural boundaries.
It's incredible how music can have that power to break down barriers and bring people together. But Germany wasn't just embracing Detroit techno wholesale, right? They were putting their own spin on it, developing their own distinct sound.
Absolutely. And this is where things get really interesting. Germany, with this rich history in electronic music, think Kraftwerk, Tangerine Dream. It was fertile ground for techno to evolve in new directions. They even had this passionate debate about how to spell it, techno with a C or techno with a K, reflecting the harder, faster, more industrial sound that was emerging in those clubs.
Wow, a spelling debate. That shows just how seriously they were taking it. But it makes sense. Germany had this long history with electronic music, so it's not surprising that they'd embrace techno and make it their own. It's like they were primed and ready for the sonic revolution.
Exactly. And that revolution was just getting started. Techno, like any vibrant genre, it wasn't content to stay static. It was about to branch out, evolve, and give birth to a whole spectrum of subgenres and sounds. But that's a story for part two of our deep dive.
All right, I am ready for the next chapter. All right, so we've traced techno's roots, from Detroit's industrial heartland to the euphoric embrace of the UK rave scene and Germany's post-reunification sonic landscape. But as you mentioned, techno wasn't content to stay frozen in time, right? It kept evolving, branching out, spawning a whole spectrum of subgenres. Like, you were really curious about intelligent techno. I gotta admit, the name always makes me chuckle. Like, is there a dress code for these parties?
No lab coats required. But the name does hint at a shift in focus. You see, by the early 90s, rave culture was becoming more commercialized, and some artists felt like techno was losing its edge a little, drifting away from its experimental roots. Intelligent techno was a way to reclaim that spirit, to create music that challenged listeners intellectually as well as physically.
So it was like a rebellion against the mainstreaming of rave. Like, hey, we're not just here to make you dance, we're here to make you think.
Exactly. Imagine listening to a techno track. That's less about the pounding energy of a rave and more about taking you on a sonic journey full of, intricate soundscapes, atmospheric textures, and unexpected twists and turns. That's the essence of intelligent techno. Think less dance floor, more headphones on, deep listening experience.
I'm starting to get the picture. It's like taking techno out of the club and into a more introspective space, exploring the more cerebral side of electronic music.
Precisely. And labels like Warp Records were crucial in bringing the sound to a wider audience. They released compilations like Artificial Intelligence, which showcased artists who were really pushing the boundaries, incorporating ambient elements, experimental soundscapes, a more introspective vibe. It proved that techno could be more than just a dance floor experience. It could be art, it could be challenging, it could be deeply personal.
It's fascinating how techno can embrace these contradictions, you know? Industrial yet soulful, mechanical yet emotional, underground yet influential. It's like this constantly evolving sound, always pushing boundaries, defying easy categorization.
Absolutely. While intelligent techno might seem like a departure from those raw Detroit origins, there's still that underlying connection to technology, their fascination with futuristic sounds and textures.
Now, speaking of defying categorization, your notes also mentioned free techno, which sounds a lot less cerebral, shall we say. What was the driving force behind that movement?
This is where those legendary free parties come in. By the early 90s, a DIY free party movement was emerging in the UK, fueled by a desire to reclaim the original spirit of rave culture, freedom, community, self-expression, and a rejection of, commercialization. They wanted to create spaces where people could come together and experience techno outside the confines of clubs and venues.
So it was like taking techno back to its roots, those early Detroit warehouse parties.
Very much so. These free parties were often held in abandoned warehouses, fields, even squats, anywhere they could set up their sound systems and create a temporary autonomous zone. A space free from the constraints of the mainstream. Sound systems like Spiral Tribe, with their, massive rigs and a rebellious spirit, they were at the forefront of this movement, bringing that raw, unadulterated techno sound to the masses.
Illegal gatherings, massive sound systems, rebellious spirit. It sounds a bit like the Wild West of techno.
It definitely had its wild side. The Wikipedia article even mentions the Castle Morton Common Festival in 1992, which drew over 35,000 people. And lasted for 5 days. It caused quite a stir and ultimately led to a crackdown on free parties in the UK. But the movement didn't die out. It simply migrated, spreading to other parts of Europe, particularly in Eastern Europe, where there was, more space, less regulation, and a hunger for that free party vibe.
It's amazing how even government crackdowns couldn't stop the music. They just took the party elsewhere. It speaks to the power of techno, doesn't it? Its ability to transcend boundaries and connect with people.
Exactly. It's a testament to the enduring spirit of techno culture, that blend of rebellion, community, and a desire to create something outside the mainstream.
Okay, so we've got intelligent techno for the head, free techno for the heart, and everything in between. But what about techno's impact on the mainstream? Did it ever break out of the underground and become a pop music phenomenon?
It's an interesting question. While it's rare for a techno artist to achieve massive pop stardom, techno's influence has definitely seeped into other genres, even mainstream pop.
Yeah, I can't really picture a pure techno track topping the Billboard charts, can you?
Not quite. But its influence is it's undeniable. The article mentions Missy Elliott sampling Cybotron, one of those early Detroit techno groups, and her smash hit Lose Control. And even Ford Motors used Model 500's No UFOs in a commercial for the Ford Focus. Talk about unexpected mainstream exposure.
Wow, a techno track selling cars. That's pretty wild. It shows how a genre that started out so underground can infiltrate all sorts of unexpected places.
Absolutely. These examples highlight that. While techno might not produce pop stars, in the traditional sense, its influence is it's vast and far-reaching. Its sounds, rhythms, and textures have found their way into everything from hip-hop and pop to film scores and video game music. It's like this hidden ingredient that adds a touch of futuristic edge and sonic grit to all sorts of musical creations.
You know, there was a section in the article that you highlighted that really got me thinking. It talks about arguments regarding techno's quote-unquote prehistory. So, like, who gets to decide what counts as techno's earliest influences? Does it go back further than Kraftwerk?
That's a complex question. As with any genre, there are always debates about origins and influences and who gets to write the official history. Some argue that techno's roots extend beyond Kraftwerk, pointing to artists like Ramin Scott, who created electronic music with remarkably similar sonic qualities back in the mid-20th century. His work, often used in cartoons and commercials, had this playful, quirky, almost proto-techno vibe.
Wait, I remember reading about Delia Derbyshire too, right? The composer who created the iconic Doctor Who theme.
Exactly. Some recently discovered tapes of her work from the 1960s sound eerily similar to modern electronic music. It's incredible to think that these sonic explorations were happening so long ago using, tape loops and analog synthesizers to create these otherworldly soundscapes. It shows that music history is full of these unexpected connections, these hidden threads that link seemingly disparate artists and genres across time.
My mind is blown. It's like we're tracing the DNA of techno, uncovering these ancestral connections that reveal a much deeper and richer history than we might have imagined. And it makes me think about that line from the Wikipedia article again, that techno sounds like technology, not technology, it sounds like music. It's like techno is this sonic mirror reflecting our ever-evolving relationship with technology, from those early experiments with, tape loops and synthesizers to the sophisticated digital tools used today.
That's a brilliant observation. It really gets to the heart of what makes techno so fascinating. It's not just about the music itself, It's about what that music says about our world, our relationship with technology, and how we express ourselves through those sonic possibilities.
Deep stuff. And speaking of technology, I'm curious about the nuts and bolts of making techno. The article touches on some of the production techniques, but I gotta be honest, some of it went over my head.
It can seem daunting, but it's actually pretty fascinating once you understand the basic principles.
Okay, break it down for us. What's going on in a techno producer's studio?
Well, the article mentions loop-based step sequencing as a key method. It's like building a sonic structure brick by brick, using loops as the building blocks. Imagine creating a short musical phrase, maybe a drum beat or a bass line, and then looping it over and over again. It's
Yeah.
a very different way of composing compared to traditional music.
So it's like a sonic sculptor chiseling away at these loops to create a groove.
Exactly. And they use a tool called a sequencer to build these repetitive patterns,
Yeah.
layering them on top of each other to create a complex and evolving sonic tapestry. You might start with a simple 44 beat on a drum machine, then add a hypnotic bass line, maybe some atmospheric pads, and then weave in snippets of melody or vocal samples. It's all about creating these hypnotic patterns that
Yeah.
draw you into the music.
I'm starting to see how that repetitive hypnotic quality is so central to techno. And I know the article mentions some classic drum machines like the Roland TR-808 and TR-909. Are those still the go-to tools for techno producers?
They definitely hold a special place in techno's history. Those machines have a distinctive sonic signature, and
Yeah.
that's become synonymous with the genre. It's like their imperfections, their quirks,
Yeah.
have become part of techno's sonic DNA. But the interesting thing is, even as technology has advanced, there's still this fascination with those older instruments.
It's like a vintage car. It might not be the newest model, but it has a certain cool factor, a unique sound that can't be replicated.
That's a great analogy. And while some producers still use those classic hardware units, the rise of computer-based music production has opened up a whole new world of possibilities. Software emulators can now recreate the sounds of those vintage machines with incredible accuracy, allowing producers to tap into that classic sound without having to, hunt down and maintain expensive, often temperamental hardware.
So you could essentially have a whole virtual techno studio right there on your laptop.
Exactly. And that accessibility has democratized techno production, allowing more people to experiment with the genre
Yeah.
and push its boundaries in new directions.
Speaking of pushing boundaries, the article ends with a discussion of techno's prehistory, those unexpected sonic ancestors that might have paved the way for the genre. We touched on Delia Derbyshire and Raymond Scott, but is there anything else that surprised you in your research?
One thing that struck me was the influence of Eurodisco and Italo disco. These genres with their, catchy melodies, driving rhythms, and synthesized soundscapes were hugely popular in the Detroit high school party scene, where techno emerged. It's fascinating to think that those seemingly cheesy 70s dance anthems might have played a role in shaping the dark futuristic sounds of techno.
Wow, it really shows how music history is full of these unexpected connections. Like, who knew that Donna Summer and Giorgio Moroder might have a distant cousin in Juan Atkins and Derrick May?
Exactly. It's a reminder that inspiration can come from the most unexpected places, and that musical genres are rarely born in a vacuum.
I feel like we've only just scratched the surface of techno's vast and complex history.
We've covered a lot of ground, but you're right. There's always more to explore.
All right, are you ready for the final leg of our sonic adventure? I know you have some great recommendations for artists and subgenres that our listener can dive into.
I'm ready. Let's help our listener take their techno exploration to the next level.
All right, we've explored techno's origins, delved into its rebellious subgenres, and even traced its sonic lineage back to, well, Some surprising ancestors. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I know you have some recommendations for our listener, artists, subgenres, or resources, anything like that.
Well, since you started with that Wikipedia article, let's use that as a springboard, right?
Sounds good.
You mentioned being intrigued by the pioneers of Detroit techno, and rightfully so. Juan Atkins, Derek May, and Kevin Saunderson. They're essential listening for anyone who wants to understand the genre's roots. Their music captures the raw energy and futuristic vision of early techno. Start with Model 500s, no UFOs, you already know it's a classic. But then dive into Cybertron's Clear, or Cosmic Cars by Jeff Mills. You'll hear how they blended those influences from Kraftwerk and European electronic music with the soul and groove of Detroit.
Okay, I'm adding those to my playlist as we speak. And what about that intelligent techno sound that really caught your eye?
If you're looking for a more cerebral, introspective techno experience, then Aphex Twin is an absolute must-listen. His music is incredibly diverse, blending elements of ambient, IDM, experimental electronica, but always with that underlying techno pulse. Check out his album Selected Ambient Works, 8592. It's a masterpiece of atmospheric, otherworldly techno that still sounds fresh and innovative. And if you're digging that vibe, Boards of Canada is another great recommendation. Their music has this warm, melancholic feel, often incorporating vintage synth sounds and a touch of nostalgia. Their album Music Has the Right to Children is a perfect starting point.
Okay, so we've got Detroit techno for the history buffs, intelligent techno for the deep thinkers. What about something with a little more edge?
For a taste of that free party, rebellious spirit, Spiral Tribe is a legendary name. In the world of free techno, I guess you can say, their music is raw, uncompromising, and designed to move a massive crowd. Their sound system culture was all about creating those temporary autonomous zones, reclaiming space for techno outside of the mainstream. It's a fascinating subculture, even if you're not planning on attending any illegal raids anytime soon.
Right. You mentioned earlier that those early electronic music pioneers, like Delia Derbyshire and Raymond Scott, are worth checking out as well.
Absolutely. Their music might not be techno in the strictest sense, but it offers a fascinating glimpse into the sonic experiments that paved the way for the genre. Derbyshire's work with the BBC Radiophonic Workshop in the 1960s is mind-blowing. She used tape loops, oscillators, and all sorts of innovative techniques to create these otherworldly soundscapes that were light years ahead of their time, and Raymond Scott's quirky, playful electronic compositions from the mid-20th century sound surprisingly contemporary, almost like a precursor to the minimal techno sound that emerged decades later.
Wow. It's amazing how music can transcend time and genre like that, how these sonic threads connect artists across generations. So what's the takeaway for our listener? What's the one thing you hope they'll remember from this deep dive into techno?
I think the most important thing is to approach techno with an open mind and a sense of curiosity. It's a genre that's constantly evolving, pushing boundaries and defying easy categorization, from its roots in Detroit's industrial landscape to its global embrace in clubs, warehouses, and festivals. Techno is a testament to the power of music to connect people, challenge expectations, and express the anxieties and hopes of our technological age.
Well said. And I think we've given our listener a solid foundation for exploring this vast and ever-expanding universe of techno. Who knows, maybe this deep dive will spark a lifelong passion or even inspire them to create some techno of their own.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. After all, techno is all about experimentation,
Right.
Pushing boundaries and finding your own unique voice within this ever-evolving sonic landscape.
On that note, I think it's time to wrap up this techno adventure. Thanks for diving in with us. We'll catch you on the next deep dive, all right? Ready to explore a whole new world of sonic possibilities.